Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Hello, this is Michelle, the host of Haunted Moonlight, a Podmoth Network podcast. If you are like me and enjoy anything and everything spooky, then this podcast is for you. New episodes drop every Sunday and are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and iHeartRadio. Can't wait to keep it spooky with you.
Hey guys, I'm Tyler.
I'm Thomas.
And I'm Jake.
And this is A Call to Madness.
This is a comedy show where we have no idea where these topics will take us.
Whether it be history, relevance between us, or all around straight madness.
Learn with us,
grow with us, and laugh with us every other Saturday at noon Central Time on Spotify,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just remember, guys,
you called,
but you only found madness.
Welcome back, everybody. How are you, Mom?
Hi, everyone. Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. Looking forward to chatting with you and hearing some fun stories today.
Yes, this one's a little mix of both. It's got a little bit of brutal and a little bit of bizarre.
Oh, fun. We seem to find a lot of those. I don't think that there's very many that were like, oh, that's truly just one or the other. So,
yeah, they usually go hand in hand. But what are you going to be talking about today?
So my story is about a cold case that was solved a few years ago. It was a missing person and they thought they had it solved, but then they realized they didn't have it solved. And now it is officially solved. So,
okay.
To go with my story, I have the Spring Bubbles cocktail. And it is made from 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/2 ounce of elderflower liqueur, 3/4 ounce of strawberry puree, 1/2 ounce of lemon juice, and 2 ounces of Prosecco. The steps are to add vodka, elderflower liqueur, strawberry puree, and lemon juice to a wine glass, and then to top it with Prosecco. Of course, you can garnish it if you want to. I did not because I didn't have the stuff to garnish it. And I will say when I was putting this drink together, I thought, oh, this stuff is not going to distribute. Like every time I poured something into the glass, it just settled. And then the strawberry puree, it was just this blob of red goo. And then I poured the Prosecco in and it like fizzed everything out and incorporated everything. And it was perfect.
I'm excited to try this.
I am too. I think it's going to be yummy. So let's give it a shot.
That's good.
I would like more strawberry in mine. I'm having a hard time tasting the strawberry. And I mean, it's sort of the beginning of strawberry season. Like you can find fresh strawberries, but I couldn't find any good ones at my store. So I bought a tub of frozen sliced strawberries in sugar. So it was kind of already made. And then I pureed it in the blender. And so maybe it would be better if it had like real fresh strawberry puree in it instead of like half frozen.
Yeah, true.
The Prosecco really kind of mutes the strawberry flavor.
Yeah, it's got that tangy like funkiness in it.
But it's not terrible. It's pretty good. I think I could enjoy that. I think that would be refreshing on a really hot summer day kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe for our 4th of July party or something.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, so my story, the reason I brought this story is because, again, it's called the Spring Bubbles Cocktail. My story starts with spring break. And we've done, we did another spring break story, and this one also ends badly. So, as
the
many
first one
people
was
know,
the town in Mexico, right?
Yeah, the cult.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that one was gross.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I'd have to go back and look at which episode that was. But that was, I think, one of our earlier episodes when we were trying to find. That was for a spooky month for October, because we were basing our stories that month. We had one story each week that was about a true story that turned into a movie, and that was one of them, and it was so gross. And then we watched the movie and it was really gross and gory, and
yeah,
so
I remember that.
This one's definitely, you know, got bad stuff in it. That's why it's a brutal story, but it's not as gross as the cult one. So spring break is a rite of passage for many teens and young adults. It often involves visiting warm locations, huge amounts of people, parties, and lots of wild activities. So when 17-year-old Brittany Drexel was told by her mother that she couldn't go on the spring break trip planned with her friends, she was very upset. Brittany was strong-willed, though, and decided not to listen to her mom's directions, and she went on the trip anyway. Let's go back, though, so I can tell you a little bit more about Brittany before that point. Brittany Drexel was born on October 7th, 1991 in Rochester, New York. She lived with her mother, Dawn, and her stepfather, Chad. She had two brothers and two sisters. She was described as carefree and energetic, with a deep love for her family, and she also enjoyed spending time with her family. Brittany was an avid soccer player, and she enjoyed making memories with her friends and shopping with them. She attended Gates Chili High School and considered being a nurse. She hoped to someday get married and have a family of her own. In April 2009, Brittany was 17 years old, and she asked permission to go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina with her friends. That town is over 800 miles away. So,
holy shit.
It's not next door.
That's a travel.
It's a bit down the road. Yeah. Her mom, Dawn, denied the request because no adults would be going on the trip. Of course not. I mean, who wants adults on a spring break trip? That's not what that's for. Yeah.
Nope.
No. So the mom, Dawn, didn't know the teens that were also going with Brittany that had also been planned this trip. So Dawn said, no, you're not going. She was also concerned about the trip because she had a feeling that something bad would happen if Brittany went to South Carolina. Spoiler alert, she was right.
Something bad did happen. Okay.
Unfortunately. This caused several arguments between mom and daughter for a few days. Brittany asked if she could take some time away and go stay with a friend for a few days in an effort to cool down the situation with her mom. Totally understandable. I get it that you would be like, hey, I need to remove myself from the house and from the situation and go somewhere else. And her mom was like, okay, that's cool. You're just going to stay across town with friends. Dawn agreed to that, staying with a friend. But teens tend to be a little sneaky. I was a sneaky teen. I didn't do anything this sneaky. You were a sneaky teen. You didn't do, as far as I know, anything this sneaky.
I don't think I did anything that sneaky.
No.
I don't even think I went like over to Medford without you guys knowing.
That's good. Well, yeah. Brittany used the opportunity to sneak away and go on the trip. And
to Myrtle Beach?
To Myrtle Beach, 800 miles away.
Okay, great.
Some guts on that girl, man. I wouldn't have considered doing something like that. I was pretty much a goody two-shoes. I mean, I did some sneaky stuff, sneaking out of the house and stuff like that, but I wasn't going to go 800 miles away. Not that.
That's a recipe for disaster. What? I'm assuming the friend she would have stayed with in town, the mother knew, so it'd be like, we could just call him and be, hey, is my daughter at your house? No? Okay, where is she? Oh, Myrtle right. Beach? What the fuck?
Right. Well, Brittany did call her mom while she was at her friend's house.
A recent case, right?
2009. So not okay, super so recent, phones but were not, out. Not I don't, old. Cell phones,
I don't know
but
if they had like tracking.
Probably not.
Didn't have like Find My iPhone or whatever.
No.
The iPhone came out in 2009.
Tracking
no, that's
stuff.
Probably wrong.
Tracking stuff became available later, and that's actually going to become a part of the story, is that they didn't know where she was at the time. I'm getting ahead of myself, though. So on April 22nd, 2009, Dawn thought Brittany was just going to stay with a friend in town, but she actually went to Myrtle Beach with her friends. Brittany did call her mom at one point, telling her that she was at the beach. Dawn assumed she meant the beach of a local lake, though, not a beach 800 miles away. The majority of the groups that Brittany was with stayed at the Bar Harbor Hotel, but another friend of Brittany's was staying at a different hotel about a mile and a half away. On April 25th, Brittany walked to the other hotel and was seen on surveillance tape leaving the hotel lobby at around 8:45 p.m. She was walking alone, and it is assumed that she intended to walk back to her own hotel, but she was never seen again. While on the trip, she had been texting her boyfriend, John, but then all contacts stopped about a half an hour after she was seen leaving the friend's hotel. John called her, called the friends that she was with, but no one could reach her and no one had seen her. John then called Brittany's mom to tell her that Brittany was missing. And she's like, what do you mean she's missing? She's at her friend's house. And he's like, well, she went to South Carolina. And of course, her mom had no idea that she'd left the state, you know, let alone why would she be missing and why is she in South Carolina? So law enforcement began looking for Brittany the next day. They were able to locate the surveillance footage from the friend's hotel, but there were no other sightings of her after that. The last known location of her phone was tracked to Georgetown, South Carolina, about 50 miles south of Myrtle Beach. Searches in that area turned up nothing, though. For years, there were no substantial leads to Brittany's whereabouts. There was a big false alarm 7 years after she went missing. A jailhouse informant claimed to have witnessed Brittany being trafficked and then shot, possibly just occurring weeks after she had been reported missing. So this guy comes forward. He says he's in a town about 60 miles away from Myrtle Beach. He sees Brittany in this house with a man. The man's name was Timothy Taylor. They were going to transport her somewhere, some dispute occurred, and he claimed that he witnessed or heard them shoot Brittany, and then that was it.
So they were trying to kidnap her.
They had already kidnapped her at that point, but they were going to ship her somewhere else. They were going to sell her off to somebody.
Okay. And she got a little rowdy and they popped her. Okay.
Right. That was this jailhouse informant story. And he specifically named...
how those go.
Well, yeah. The FBI believed that Timothy Taylor, the guy that was named in this story, they believed that he was involved. And he failed a polygraph when he was questioned about Brittany. So they thought, aha, we've got him. They announced the conclusion that Brittany was dead due to this story. So they're going on, okay, jailhouse informant says this guy killed her. She's dead. We don't know where she is, but, you know, she's buried somewhere. But the whole thing was a lie. Turned out to be completely false. This guy, Timothy Taylor, had been nailed for it all. And because they had believed this fake story, the real killer managed to live free for several more years.
Jesus.
Yeah. In the early stages of the original investigation, when she first went missing, an area sex offender had been on law enforcement's radar. His name was Raymond Moody. He had been pulled over by the police in a town close to Myrtle Beach the day after Brittany disappeared. However, nothing substantial came of that investigation into Moody at the time. Then years later, when Taylor was implicated in the death, investigators figured the case was essentially solved, even though no body had been found. In 2019, 10 years after she went missing, through new phone tracking technology, investigators were able to pinpoint Brittany's movements on the night she disappeared. So now is where that tracking hole thing, you know, not to find my iPhone, but they were able to go back through the cell data and find out like what her specific movements were and the speed at which she moved through those specific locations. So they saw that she was walking down the main street in Myrtle Beach, and then she started, her phone started moving at a rapid pace. So she was being driven to an area near Georgetown, South Carolina. So a different town. In April 2022, the case really opened back up. Detectives interviewed a woman named Angel Voss. She was the longtime girlfriend of the sex offender that I mentioned earlier, Raymond Moody. Although Moody had been a person of interest in the early days of the investigation, at that time there was no evidence found to show his involvement. So they just kind of clocked him on the radar, but they were like, we got nothing on him. When Angel Voss was interviewed, she initially denied having met Brittany or ever being in a car with her. She did tell police that Moody was violent and he would talk to her about having fantasies about kidnapping teenage girls. Voss agreed to wear a wire and discuss Brittany with Moody. So she essentially went undercover and talked to him about, hey, remember when? A few weeks later, Moody confessed to detectives, because Angel had gotten him to talk about the whole situation. Cops went, said, hey, we got this information that you're talking about it. And he was like, all right. So he finally confessed. He told detectives everything they needed to finally wrap up the case. He admitted that he and his girlfriend picked up Brittany as she was walking down the street. He claimed that Brittany got into the car willingly, but her family says that she would never have done that. In his confession, he said that he drove the three of them to a campsite near Georgetown, and after his girlfriend left, he raped Brittany. Then getting concerned that he would get in trouble for the rape, he decided to strangle and kill her. He later buried her body at another location, which he told the police, so they were able to find her body where he claimed it would be and in the position he reported. So he told them everything. Her identity was confirmed through dental records and DNA. Moody pleaded guilty to numerous charges regarding Brittany's death, including kidnapping, criminal sexual misconduct, and murder. He was sentenced to 2 30-year terms to be served consecutively with the kidnapping and the sex charges, and he was sentenced to life in prison for the murder. Voss, the girlfriend, on the other hand, had signed a cooperation agreement with the prosecutors, which meant that she wasn't really prosecuted for anything, but they figured it was better to do that and get Moody convicted than to, because they didn't have enough evidence without her testifying and her cooperation. So Although there was likely enough evidence to charge her with being an accessory, they felt that giving her some immunity would be better to solving the murder. And that is the story about when you sneak away and you're not supposed to go on spring break. It's a cautionary tale. Yes, jinx. You owe me a Coke, but I don't drink Coke, so.
Well, is that, did you just say that because of the armchair expert
this No. week? Oh, no, I didn't listen to that.
Cautionary tales.
Oh, really? Oh, how yeah. funny.
That's why it's on my brain.
Oh, no. Nope, I did not say that because of that. I haven't listened to that episode yet. How funny.
So let's talk about my bizarre story.
Yes.
Poran Singh, who went by T2, was born on December 11th, 1982, and he was born in the village of Bod, located in northern India, about 8 miles from the city of Agra. His mother was sick during the third trimester and was admitted into a military hospital until she gave birth. He was the youngest of 6 children in his family and was somewhat of a normal child until he turned about 2. This is where things start to get weird. Oh. He started speaking at 18 months, and once he was able to form a sentence, he told his mother something that would shock the world. In quotes.
Camp. Ready to be shocked.
Okay. In quotes. Tell my grandfather to look after my children and my wife, Uma. I am having my meals here and I'm worried about them.
What?
And this is when he was about 2 years old.
Okay, say it again.
Tell my grandfather to look after my children and my wife, Uma. I am having my meals here and I am worried about them. I think that might be a little translation error between the like later part of the sentence where I'm having my meals here. I'm worried about them. That seems like a little bit of a weird sentence, but...
Yeah, okay.
That's what he's quoted as saying.
Are you going to explain, hopefully, what that might mean?
Okay, good. Yes, and he's going to explain it more, what it means.
Okay, that's so, super bizarre. Yeah.
Super weird. So his parents kind of laughed it off, but his behavior led them to believe him. So he would often complain as if he wasn't a part of their family. So when his mother would go out, he would often criticize her clothes, saying his wife had beautiful clothing and much nicer than hers. Like, super weird things like that. Oh. He would often complain about their house, saying his house was much larger and nicer than his family's house was.
Okay.
Yeah. One day, T2 attended a wedding in Agra and told his parents that he owned a shop in the Sadar Bazaar, which was in Agra, which is a cool name. I like that name, Sadar Bazaar.
Yeah.
It's like a little shopping area with little like family-owned shops in it and stuff like that.
Cool. I like it.
Everyone kind of laughed it off, but as a few... a few months later... T2's father went to Agra without him. He became upset and asked a friend if he could take him there. And he was upset because he's saying, hey, I own this shop in Agra. We're here for the wedding. Can we just stop by?
Okay. And
they're like, no, we're not going to. They just think he's being funny being or weird. Something.
How old is he at this point? Do you know?
It's hard to track the age at this point, but I think he's about like 3 to 4.
Okay. He's 3 or 4 and he's saying he owns a shop in a bazaar.
Yes. Okay. In a bazaar that he's probably never been to because he doesn't live in the town. They were just going for a friend's wedding.
Wild.
So he got upset that his father went to Agra without him. And he explained to a friend of his brother that he was in a past life a smuggler and operated out of a radio shop he owned called Suresh Radio.
Okay.
Yeah. The friend didn't initially believe T2, but had nothing else to do, so he went to the store with T2's brother, since T2 was only about 6 or 7 at this time. Sorry. He was about 6 or 7 when he started mentioning the store. But
the store. Okay.
Like, the store by name. But when he was going to the wedding, he was about 4-ish.
Okay.
So these are events that are happening kind of like as he's getting older. It's not like all at once.
Gotcha.
But when they arrive at the store, they are greeted by the widowed shop owner named Uma Verma. So he had said that his wife, Uma.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's starting to get a little weird. They explained what T2 had been telling them, and Uma suddenly felt very strange. She told them that the late husband, Suresh Verma, used to own the shop and worked out of it as a smuggler.
Okay.
He was shot in the head as he arrived home from work about 4 to 5 months before T2 was born.
Wow.
Strangely enough, T2 had a birthmark on the right side of his head near the temple, exactly where Suresh was shot. They shaved like the side of his head, and he had just like a little patch of no hair growing on his temple where her husband was shot.
Where the husband had been shot?
Yes. Super, super weird. T2 sat next to Uma and recounted a story of their family going to a fair and was able to remember exactly what happened that day, which would have only been known by Uma's husband. Because it was just like a little family outing, like there's no one recording them or like taking. Yeah, so many weird things happening.
Right. So he knows details and names and things that he shouldn't.
That she shouldn't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uma and T2's family were suspicious, so they gathered Uma's children and some other children for a blind test.
Okay.
T2 was able to point out Uma's and Suresh's 2 kids out of all the neighborhood children. There's like,
of course,
15 to 20 kids just running around.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, that one's mine.
Yeah. T2 was brought to Suresh's family home, and he recalled many family details from when Suresh was a kid. In an interview with Suresh's parents, they said, I'm 100% sure that's him in that kid's body. Like, he knows things that only our family would know. In total, T2 made 15 verifiable statements before meeting Suresh's family and 30 verifiable statements after meeting them.
Wow.
Yeah. And that is the story of T2.
Oh my goodness. That's so interesting.
Weird story. Yeah.
Because we've done reincarnation stories, and oftentimes, as they get older, those memories fade, you know, because it's oftentimes kids that have these memories, and those memories fade as they get older. I wonder how long if that happened with him, or if he always had those memories and always felt like he was the other person.
I don't know. It's super, super bizarre, and it makes me feel weird just kind of thinking about it. It's like,
yeah,
especially once I read the detail that he had a birthmark where that guy was shot. I mean, I want to say it's unexplainable, but that seems pretty explainable to me. It's just that might sound crazy explaining it
in a bizarre world, but man. That is wild.
Super weird. And that was
back in a time where it's not like he could have looked that information up.
Yeah, or like seen a TV show about it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not looking that information up at 3 years old. Wow. I like that story.
Yeah, so it had a little bit of brutal because the guy got shot.
He got shot and killed.
Yeah, wow. That's not good, but...
Do you have a chaser for us?
So my chaser is a watch recommendation for the show Fallout on Hulu.
Oh.
Do you know anything about that?
No, but I just was hearing about it and it sounded really good.
So it's based off a video game and I didn't play too much. I played a little bit of each game. I played a couple hours of each game just on friends' Xboxes and whatnot. But I haven't played the full game, but it's got a lot of like references and stuff. And it's a good enough show that like, even if you don't know the reference, like they're like niche references. It's like a stim pack or a rat away is like, they'll use names of the stuff from the game that you might not.
Okay.
No, but it's pretty self-evident. It's like, oh, I'm going to use the rad away, and it's to get radiation away, and it's like for radiation sickness. Sense.
Right.
Yeah, stuff like that. But it's got Walton Goggins in it, who I love. I love Walton Goggins.
Yeah.
So I immediately had to watch it. I'm not a huge, huge fan of the games, but I really like the show. The show is great.
Okay.
I recommend everyone should watch it.
So... because you are a fan of Walton Goggins, I will reiterate that you need to go back and watch
Justified. I know.
Dude, it is his 100% best role I have ever seen him in. He is a great actor. He's done some great stuff.
Yeah.
But you want to hate him in that show, but you love him so much that you're like, I hate myself for loving him because he's such a bad guy, but he's not a bad guy. But you want to hate him, but you love him. Dude, you gotta, I'm serious. You will love that show. And I know that we've said this before.
What can you watch it on?
I think you can watch it on Hulu.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you can watch it on Hulu.
He's not in the new one, though, right?
Wow. He is, but he's not. So,
okay, it's like one episode he comes in or something.
Yeah, literally, like, spoiler alert, like the last the
very end.
5 minutes.
That's why you said the show sucked until the very end and it all made sense.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The show stuck because Boyd wasn't
it. Well, not just that, but I mean, I really felt like the new season, they got away from who the main character was. Like, he was not the same character. And I know that it was written, the original series came out many years ago. It was a different time. It was a different era. We had different political correctness back then. And I really, like the new season, I felt like all they did was try to be politically correct.
That sucks.
Okay. For example, the original very first episode of Justified. Season 1, episode 1. Like within 5 minutes, the main character shoots a guy in the head. And that is the premise for the whole show.
True.
That he gets in trouble.
Cowboy.
I'm pretty sure I don't remember Raylan Givens shooting anyone in the new season until maybe the last episode. It was
what? But,
yeah, the whole show was about him having his own level of justice. And
that's so dumb.
This the new season, it was a complete departure from that. So that's why I didn't like it.
Wow.
And everyone
okay.
that I have
the original then.
Everyone that I've talked to about the new season has said the same thing. Like, it's not the original, it's nothing like the original. The character's not the same. He just doesn't even act like the same person. So when you love a show for, I think it was 6 seasons, and then they do a new one and it's a completely different character, it's disappointing. So yeah. Anyway. That's I'll jump off my justified TV show soapbox.
Well,
don't get me started.
We'll wrap this episode up here.
I gotta tell you my chaser.
Oh.
Are you ready for my chaser?
For some reason I thought the justified one.
No.
Okay, let's go.
My chaser is that I have finished my Invisalign. And my teeth are straight and I'm done. I don't have to wear trays anymore during the day. I only have to wear retainers at night. And I'm so excited. And it's only been a couple of days. And I feel like I'm doing something wrong every time I leave the house without my trays in. Because I'm like, I finish a meal and I'm like, I gotta go put my trays back in. And I'm like, no, I don't. This is so wrong. So if anybody is on the fence about doing Invisalign, any listeners going through it, I understand your pain. And but if you want to do it, I would recommend it. I'm very pleased with how my teeth turned out and how my smile is all nice and straight and how I don't have one long janky looking tooth and my teeth aren't all overlapping. No one, I've had several people go, I never noticed that your smile was janky. And I'm like, well, I did at the core of everything that every cell in my body knew that my smile was janky. And now that my smile is not, I'm very happy. So, and I'm happy to be able, I can free graze snack again.
Yeah, you don't have to think about what, when and where you can eat.
Yes, exactly. I can just walk by and go, that looks good, and take a bite. So I'm excited. That's my chaser, is finishing my Invisalign. I know it's silly, but I'm excited about it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. I enjoyed hearing that spooky spring break story.
Yes. Just a reminder to anyone, if you feel so inclined and would like to join our Patreon, we would love to have you on Patreon. Because we are doing some fun things over there. You will get ad-free episodes. So the ads that we put at the beginning and sometimes in the middle, those will not be there. You will get ad-free content and you will get special episodes where we talk about, we call it our happy hour, but it's not really happy because we're talking about terrible, tragic things sometimes. But we do more like current stories, and then we do a lot of chit-chatting, more chit-chatting than we do in a regular episode. So if you are interested, please go support us on Patreon and we would fully love it. And if you cannot support us on Patreon financially, which we totally understand, we would love to have anyone write us a little review on Apple Pod and we will read it off and say thank you so much. So if you're not a financial supporter but would like to be a word supporter, please go send us some words on Apple Podcasts.
Awesome. Well, love you, Mom.
Love you too, bud.
Bye.
Hey friends, thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.